Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, Preparing for Disaster in America, on April 1st, 2014. I'm your host, Joe Terry, and the South Bay Show is brought to you by the Academy of Foreign Languages. If you have any interest in learning a new language or brushing up on existing language skills, you should know about the Academy of Foreign Languages. Located in Palos Verdes, the Academy of Foreign Languages specializes in the art of communication. Their mission is to provide the finest language instruction possible. They recognize that each student has distinctive needs and craft their teaching technique to optimize an individual's particular learning skills. At the Academy of Foreign Languages, they strive to create a comfortable environment conducive to learning. So whether you're learning a new language or would simply like to converse in your native tongue, the Academy of Foreign Languages can accommodate you. For more information, visit their website at www.academyofforeignlanguages.com. That's all spelled out, academyofforeignlanguages.com, or call 310-975-4133. That's 310-975-4133. You can find out more about us at facebook.com/The South Bay Show or visit our website at thesouthbayshow.com. Preparing for disaster in America. This is a subject that can never be treated lightly, but we do our best to make it interesting, engaging, and yes, even entertaining to learn the few key skills and primary information that could save your life, your family's lives, that of a neighbor in a time of crisis, or the life of a treasured pet. Our mission is to engage hearts and minds and build knowledge and skills to help you prepare for whatever may come. This show is a true collaboration with Solid Roots in the Community and a partnership with the Official Disaster Preparation Establishment. Our producer is founder and president of the local Manhattan Beach CERT Association and the Red Cross's community ambassador to Manhattan Beach, Mr. George Butts. Hey, George, how are you doing today?
Yes, good morning, Joe. Good morning, listeners. We got little rain last night, but I think we survived.
Yes, good, good, good. And, of course, with us today is owner, producer, writer of SouthBayByJackie.com, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well this morning, Joe. Good morning, George.
Good morning, Jackie.
All right. So we have one of those rare events, a big earthquake this past weekend, and hundreds of aftershocks, and so there's something to talk about there. But we also have a very special guest. We're very glad to have him. Jackie, who's our guest today?
It's a timely guest. Our guest this morning is Jeff Robinson. Jeff is the Executive Director of Area G Disaster Management for Los Angeles County. Jeff was a volunteer with the Dorchester County Civil Defense Agency in 1979 when the change took place from civil defense to FEMA. In 1995, Jeff was appointed radio officer to assist with communications during disasters and exercises, and he was then appointed assistant director at the same agency, as well as being the LEPC chairman. As the county he worked in was in a plume and ingestion zone for a nuclear power plant, Jeff participated in yearly exercises for that purpose. He was part of many activations of the EEOC for blizzards, tropical storms, hurricanes, tornadoes, flooding, and the infamous Y2K event, non-event. Jeff accepted a full-time position with the Wicomico County Emergency Management Agency as an emergency management technician in 2002. He switched coasts in 2007 and accepted the position of Emergency Services Coordinator for the El Segundo Fire Department, where he oversaw the emergency management functions for the city. In 2012, he took on the challenging position of Executive Director of Area G Disaster Management, where he works with all 14 cities in the South Bay and assists them in the continuing development of their emergency management programs. Jeff has achieved the International Association of Emergency Managers certification, joining a select group of only 1,700 certified emergency managers internationally. He is now developing a virtual operations support group for Area G, and this morning we'll be discussing the role social media plays before, during, and after a disaster. Welcome back to the program, Jeff. We are so glad you could join us this morning.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning. Well, you know, Jeff, it is timely because we did just have a series of foreshocks, a main quake, and aftershocks here in Southern California. So right off the bat, of course, because a lot of people will be aware of this, they will be thinking about this, regardless of where they are in the country, because it was big news. Can you just give us a window into what Area G knew and when they knew it?
Well, I was in my home in unincorporated Torrance, and about 8 o'clock, a few minutes after 8, and I have on my wall a little thing called a quake alarm. It's like a smoke detector, only it's for picking up earthquake, picking up the P waves.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sat there in my little quake alarm dinged a few times, and I go, oh, we're having an earthquake somewhere. So about a minute later, the USGS website popped up with, you know, a 3.6, I believe it was.
Hmm.
About an hour later, my wife and I were sitting there talking, and it dinged, and then it dinged, and then it ding, 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 ding for a good 30 seconds. And, you know, the rolling, it was a lot of rolling in there.
Right.
And then I went on and found out that it was a 5.1 or 5. First, initially, I think you said 5.5, but then it went back to 5.1. But still, that little tool really helped. I mean, give a heads up on what happened, you know, how it was coming.
Now, yeah, we have heard of those P waves before. Can you just remind us what P waves are?
Well, the P waves are when the initial earthquake happens. They're the fast waves, the waves that go through the fastest. The S waves are the slow waves where you start to feel the rolling and stuff.
Right.
The P waves are like the sonic, you know, a wave that's transmitted. Mm-hmm. So this little alarm picks that wave up before, you know, you feel the other, before you feel the rolling and things.
I see. Well, now, of course, here in Southern California, a lot of people felt the earthquake and then said, oh, you know, that wasn't really a big one. But days later, we hear and we see that quite a bit of damage actually occurred to individual properties, walls and retaining walls falling down and some severe cracking in some homes. A pretty severe level of damage for some homes and buildings. What light can you shed on how all the gears in place, all the gears turning to be prepared if it had been a big one? Did everything go well in Area G?
In Area G, yes, everything went fine here. I mean, luckily, you know, there was not. Not a lot. It was no damage. Some people felt it. Some people didn't. It's according where you lived.
Mm-hmm.
Other areas, you know, felt it quite a bit. Some people noticed the roll. You know, that's the only notification they had that was a starting. That was an earthquake. There was a rolling because we weren't close enough to it. You know, we didn't feel the jolt as a lot of people did that lived nearby. But the thing with an earthquake is you never know what's going to happen, and if you're not prepared for when that incident happens, you're not prepared. I mean, it's going to catch you wishing that you had done things different.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we're going to talk a little bit about communications and social media today, which I'm very excited about because a lot of these things are maturing. They've been around. The whole concept of social media is really for people like me that have been in the computer industry. It's a blink of an eye, 5 years or less that social media has really been a big thing. Twitter. Or Facebook in general is just Google is just 15 years old. It's crazy. Google is just becoming really a teenager, and social media is half that age, 7 to 10 years old. So, how important is social media becoming in the larger context of disaster preparation and notification?
In the large overall scheme, if you're not on social media, you're behind the eight ball.
Yeah.
You have to have social media in your emergency operations now, whether you want it or not. I mean, it's there.
Mm-hmm.
Because like when the Northeast, when the earthquake happened in Virginia a couple years ago, people in Boston had 60 seconds notice before they even felt it. I mean, you know, because they traveled a long distance back there.
Mm-hmm.
But the tweets on that went out there is an infographic on it. It shows you how that it shows you the time this tweet started and how long they ran and where they came from. It was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Here, like I say, I'm teaching social media. I hope to be an instructor for the National Disaster Preparedness Training Center for the social media for natural disaster response and recovery course. I'm teaching in Phoenix in a couple weeks.
Okay.
I'm still new into it, though. I mean, you know, it's interesting. I mean, you know, the more you learn, the more you want to learn and how things go. But yeah, my presence on social media has increased in the last 8 or 9 months, probably tenfold.
Right. So a lot of people still aren't aware of exactly what we're talking about. So let's break it down for them and try to dive in as deeply as we can and make sense of it. Because people, if they get involved in social media, they can be more aware and more tuned in, even post-disaster. So let's talk about all of the advantages. And what are we talking about? Are we talking Facebook, Twitter? What are the different services we're talking about?
Yeah, well, mainly, I mean, there's a lot out there, but Facebook and Twitter are your two main hubs of information. I mean, Facebook is, you know, there's a lot of pros and cons to Facebook. A lot of people said that, you know, the younger crowd are getting off Facebook. They're just dealing with Twitter. I mean, there's a lot of little other new as we talk, I mean, there's probably two new social media things that have started today. I mean, it's just the evolution. But I'm on Facebook, but I don't use it for a lot of things. I'm on Twitter most of the time when I'm on there because it's instantaneous. Facebook, you're posting stories, you know, pictures and the process, but Twitter, you're with that 140 characters, you're posting the information that's needed right away,
mm-hmm.
and it's out there, and you can follow it. I mean, you can follow many conversations you want instantaneously.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Jeff, I got a question for you.
Okay.
So do you have, I don't even know if you can do this, can you preset certain things on Twitter where we just had an earthquake, where you can just press a button, say, we just had an earthquake and send it out, or do you have to quickly put in those 140 characters?
No, you can put earthquake in L.A., and, you know, that's it, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, all I right. mean, you don't have to have a complete 140 characters. Some people put down 20 or 30, you know, just to, like, here's one I just saw. Sorry, I just couldn't resist, but then they had a link to something, you know, but, you know, it's
No.
It's up to you.
No, I meant in terms of what you specifically are doing with getting the word out. Do you have presets?
No, I don't have presets.
Okay.
I mean,
I don't even know
done.
If you can do presets. Yeah, I don't even know if you can.
Yes, you can schedule. You can schedule tweets. There's a lot of different things you can do, but it takes work and takes understanding. But, yeah, I mean, no, I just I just put out right at the moment, you know, because it only takes you 10 seconds to type something real quick, you know, to put it out. I mean, we could have been earthquake in L.A., unknown where, you know, and then it hit that. And because once you start doing that, the feeds start going. And
right.
then we start using hashtags to start locating things to make sure everybody's on the same page.
It wouldn't have taken long for us to talk about Twitter, Facebook, Google, Instagram before talking about hashtags. hashtags, it's part of the lexicon today. So let's talk about that. When you send out a tweet...
I used to eat a lot of hash as a kid.
Yeah, you did.
that's all I knew about hash.
Yeah.
I remember, George, they used to say if you got, you know, into a fight and you got a black eye or whatever, they said, man, your face looks like hash. You know,
you got tagged too, didn't you?
Exactly. But now they've smashed them together and they're hashtags. The pound sign or the number sign followed by a word, unbroken by spaces, it can be numbers and letters. That is essentially a they call it metadata. It's in addition to, attached to the message. You can have as many of those part of your tweet as you want. And then people can follow those hashtags and in that way organize the sort of stream of consciousness messages that they see. Instead of just every tweet from the people that you're connected to, you can see every tweet that has that hashtag or another hashtag, and that's one way of organizing. Is that, you know, we see this everywhere. I mean, it was on the Oscars. It was, you know, in every sporting event, of course, hashtag whatever the particular teams are. How is that being used in the context of emergency management?
Hashtags are very important because, look, a few weeks ago we had the rain event, the large rain event. We used the hashtag officially as LA rain. Well, unofficially, people were posting with like 7 or 8 different hashtags, like California weather, LA weather, rain, I mean, just different things. And so what I did, I went on and I geocoded locations and found out what people were posting from that, from the locations, to find out what hashtags they were using. And then I used Hootsuite and went in there and made my streams running with all the different hashtags so I could follow what was going on.
Right. Now, you just mentioned a program called Hootsuite, which is, Jackie, you were wondering about, can there be presets? Can you have sort of tweets preset that you can just send out rapid fire without typing them in? If you did want to do that, you would need some software, social media management software, to allow you to do that. And Hootsuite, we might as well, you know, give them a plug, allows you to do that. There is a free trial. You can try it out and see how it works. Also very, very useful for people that, you know, promote media, like you do, Jackie, Hootsuite, Hootsuite, Hootsuite.
Good to know. Good to know.
And there's also another one out there. It's called, maybe to be fair, it's called TweetDeck. So there's two of them that, you know, are used really popular to use.
Right. So in the case that, and we just did have a major event. In the case that there's a major event, when the machine, the disaster management machine starts rolling up, how what the hashtags are that people should follow to get more information as as things develop?
Well, that's the part of what we're trying to do with developing this virtual operations support group here in South Bay. Most cities are very short-staffed, and especially in emergency operation, they have one public information officer, and they have not many people to monitor social media. So the process in this virtual operations support team is we have a group of trusted agents, and I hope to develop like 4 teams for this area because we're such a large area, and to take in have those people trained to go in and monitor what I was trying to say about geocoded locations, and to follow what the hashtags are. Now, the city should be putting out, this is what we want everything to go under. So we can have those people putting out to all the groups and everything that we have connections to, because everybody's not connected to everybody. So somewhere along the line, somebody else will see it, and they'll connect it, and they'll retweet it to somebody else. But if we can get that information corrected from the beginning, at least we can start narrowing that focus down. But if not, the groups can take and cipher that information and get it back to the city saying, here's what we're seeing, here's what we're finding, here's where the problems are, here's some information that we're not sure of, we got to verify it. Mm-hmm. So that's the process.
One of the things that makes tweeting, especially for disaster management, effective, if it can be organized properly, is that people can participate with their mobile phones. You can get a lot of what we sometimes term crowdsourced information, all feeding into one funnel, and then someone else can be analyzing that information, and you can have a lot of eyes on the ground looking and feeding you information. Is that part of what you're looking to do is to get more boots on the ground, basically, during the...
Yeah, I mean, it is crowdsourcing, only this is done for a controlled environment because you have a lot of liability issues involved in there because you're doing things for a city. But, yeah, it's crowdsourcing. In fact, speaking of crowdsourcing, this Malaysian Airlines Flight 370, I was doing crowdsourcing. I looked at 1,900, 2,000 images, pixels of maps for looking for this plane, along with thousands of other people. We did a crowdsourcing for two or three different times on that. Yeah, but crowdsourcing is exactly what it is, only in a more controlled environment because you have to have trusted agents.
Right. I want to talk about that. Is there still a link, or is it something that is still going on, the crowdsourcing analysis of the satellite imagery?
Yes. TomNod, TomNod.com is the crowdsourcing link. You sign up there, and you'll be able to go in and look at there are different areas. I mean, they've got maps. They'll pull up, and you can look in different areas to see if it's anything you see.
Wow.
And then it's verified, yeah.
I want to make sure people get that. It's TomNod.
N-O-D,
TomNod.com.
Yeah.
And this is very similar to, Jeff, you probably may have known about this. There's an effort called Galaxy Zoo.
Yes.
That is also a crowdsourced image analysis application where, people may not know, but there are millions, if not billions, of galaxies that we can see, but it helps if they're categorized, and there are certain categories of galaxies. Many people are familiar with the spiral galaxy, that is our own Milky Way galaxy. And these categories, if we can attach these categories to all of the galaxies, helps astronomers in various tasks that they're performing. And so they provide these images. People can create an account. They can go to Galaxy Zoo, and that they can look at these images, categorize them. Then if multiple people categorize them as a spiral galaxy, then that's considered accurate, and then that goes in the database, and that's very helpful. Now, do you know, Jeff, has anyone have there been some hits that have proved successful in TomNod for missing airplane Malaysia Airlines MH370?
I'm not sure. I don't think that any of the things, there's a lot of images that came out, but I don't think any of them have come out to be part of the plane, part of this debris and things.
Right.
I mean, I've saw about, 30 or 40 items that I didn't know what they were, and you click on it and it highlights the area, and then you have a team that goes behind and verifies the information that you're looking at.
Right.
So I'm not sure if any of that has really come to fruition yet, but...
Wow. So we are in earthquake country. We are as prepared as perhaps any region of the United States for earthquakes. What happened was a relatively minor earthquake, although some people did experience some property damage of a kind. There was a lot of property damage of things being dropped off shelves and so forth. Some people lost some very delicate items that weren't secured properly, perhaps. But in essence, though, this wasn't even close. What we had a 5.1. That was the major earthquake. There were foreshocks, aftershocks. How much more powerful, Jeff, would a 6.1 have been?
It would have been 10 times stronger.
Right. And a 7.1?
And that would be 100 times stronger.
Right, 100 times stronger. It's almost difficult to imagine an 8.1, Jeff.
Yes, I would not want to. I just hope that if we have an 8.1, I'm long away, tired, sitting back somewhere where there's not an earthquake, and I can sit back and say, "Oh no."
Right.
I tried to tell them, but
And we're not talking crazy numbers. You know, 9.0s have either happened every year or somewhere around the world, or have happened in California at some time in the past. 8.1 is within the realm of possibility, and that's 1,000 times powerful than the 5.1 that happened. That is unimaginable. 1,000 times more powerful.
It is unimaginable. I mean, people, you know, they look at Northridge, I mean, which was strong, 6.4, but we're thinking, you know, you look at Northridge, it was a localized earthquake. It didn't spread a large area.
Right.
You know, look at the damage it did, Northridge, but it was a localized earthquake. I pity, you know, I'm sorry for the people that lost their lives and the damage and stuff, but people aren't using that and looking at it goes, wow, what could it have been? And even in planning, a lot of people still do not look at the reality of something that large and that bad, of what it would do to, I mean, I tell people, and George, you can testify to this, I tell them that if we ever have that 7.1 or larger, that Katrina will be a forgotten event because of the amount of people we have here in Southern California.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and let's take this one step forward now, because and it's been brought up. It's in the Associated Press, the New York Times, where, you know, it is being discussed here locally now. The Puente Hills fault.
Yes.
That's the one. It's, you know, we have been testing for, you know, and practicing for 6 years, 7 years now. The big one, the San Andreas fault. That one, it's going to shake. It's going to beat us up pretty good. But literally now, this 5.1 has brought out the fact that this fault, if it goes to a 6 or up to a 7.5, which it's capable of, will take down part of downtown Los Angeles because it runs under that fault.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking thousands, tens of thousands that could die, and you know millions or billions of dollars to put the place back together.
It's So I'd like to, Jeff, after the break, we're going to take a break soon, and I'd like to, after the break, really talk about that and the advantages and disadvantages of having such a potential, and yet, you know, we talk about the level of preparedness among the population not being that high. You would think with such a potential that it would be higher. Perhaps if we got up to 50%, we'd be very lucky. We would like to talk about that and other things because we have Jeff in the house. Jeff Robinson, Executive Director, Disaster Management for Los Angeles Area G. And there are how many areas within L.A. County, Jeff?
There's 8 areas.
There's 8 areas. Okay. So we recently talked to Jeff Reeb, and we had a chance to chat about the scope of L.A. County. L.A. County. Los Angeles County, the budget of Los Angeles County, larger than the budgets of 42 states, and it's just huge. And even with a disaster of magnitude, let's say an 8.0 earthquake, and the severe damage that would occur in Los Angeles, there's a lot of Los Angeles County that would not be so devastated and would be there to respond and to help and so forth. So we want to talk about that interrelationship between the areas. At this time, though, we'd like to thank a sponsor. Jackie, who would we like to thank?
You know, before we go to the sponsor, remind me later on to ask Jeff where I get one of those nifty little earthquake alarms. I want to get one of them.
Okay.
All right. Okay, it's never too early to begin planning your financial future. When it comes to protecting your assets and hard-earned dollars, you'll want experienced professionals with a proven track record and flawless reputation on your team. Briganti, Cameron, Waters & Strong, certified public accountants and consultants, is the largest full-service accounting firm in the South Bay, and they are dedicated to providing professional services of the highest quality. The partners are South Bay residents, deeply committed to serving the communities where they live, work, and play. They support a variety of local nonprofit organizations such as Skate Park PV, Palos Verdes Peninsula Land Conservancy, the Torrance South Bay YMCA, Rotary, and Pediatric Therapy Network, among others. BCWS prides itself on providing national accounting technical experience with the personal attention of a local company. This commitment to uphold high standards of excellence has proven key to their success and first-rate reputation. Their ultimate goal and reward is to see their clients achieve financial success as they define it, whether that means helping them to reduce their tax burden, assisting them with planning to ensure their financial security, succession planning, exit strategies, and wealth transfer. The partners and professionals of BCWS are committed to providing their clients with the expertise and guidance they need to reach their financial goals. For more information, visit the website at www.bcws.com or call 310-542-0011. It's April 1st. It's April 1st, and tax day is April 15th. Remember that.
Oh, my God, just 2 weeks away.
That's right. That's right.
So Jeff, yeah, let's talk about that. There's I'm sorry, did you say eight areas within LA
yes.
County? Eight areas.
Yes,
okay.
I mean eight. There's eight areas. There's Area A, which is the four cities on the west side, which is Beverly Hills, West Hollywood, Culver City, and Santa Monica. Then Area B is from Malibu on up to Lancaster on the west side. Area C is the foothills. Area D is the 25 cities over on the northeast side. In fact, the Puente, La Puente and stuff like that, where that area, Puente Hills.
Mm-hmm.
Area E is the 23 cities in the southeast corner. Area F is city of Long Beach plus Avalon and Signal Hill. And then Area G is the 14 cities here. And then Area H is L.A. City alone.
So when we talk about the coordination between the areas and if there were the Puente Hills fault, if there were a quake on that fault, the other areas would be somewhat unaffected, the farther ones, perhaps unaffected enough so that they could help and respond with resources and personnel. But it's going to be a difficult, long haul for everyone if we get a big one. How do you prepare for something like this?
We all, you know, all the DMACs work together to try to understand what the process is, and we're here to support LA County Office of Emergency Management as Jeff Reeb, the director.
Mm-hmm.
Our job is to support each other if one needs help, something happens. I mean, you might be personally involved. You can't, your house is damaged. You won't be able to go anywhere. You won't be able to do anything. You're trying to take care of your family.
Mm-hmm.
So the other DMACs fill in. But we have two positions at LA County Office of Emergency Management when they're activated that we have to fill, and that's for each shift. So that's four of us. But really, there's only five of the DMACs who are at any time are available because LA City is doing LA City things, Long Beach is doing it Long Beach thing, and then and then the West Side they might have a person available, but it's possible between Santa Monica and because they feel a lot of damage a lot of times the way that everything runs through there, so for them not to be available, so it's the other areas we have to pull the slack to get those people into the EOC to handle. To support the other DMACs, plus to support all the cities, because that's our job is to liaison between the cities and OEM of advocating for resources. What do we need? What do you need? How can we get it there?
Mm-hmm.
To let them know what's going on, to get the bigger picture.
Right.
So it's like the mutual aid thing that like the beach cities have with their fire departments, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like that. It's an understanding as part of our joint powers authority of what we do and how we do it. But it's a process. Like I say, we have to understand the process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's something that we just haven't experienced yet. But when you think of the social media aspect, what else do you think of that we can tell people about that they can utilize in their own lives?
I tell people in social media, if you don't have an account, get one, because
right.
It's a good way of even communication, because most of the time, like I say, you won't be able to call, you'll be able to text message. There's a possibility that data might be working and data might not be working. I mean, there's no guarantees in this world. Everything's going to depend on how much battery backup the cell towers have.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a possibility, though, that you can keep involved with social media. You can find out what's going on, because you're going to get the correct information put out there by the correct people. I mean, they're going to direct you to the correct information. It's easier to follow on social media than it is try to wait and hear rumors.
Right.
You can look on there. Of course, there's always, you know, people aren't devious in some senses, but in some sense, there's always people like play pranks and stuff like that. They found that out during Hurricane Sandy. There was people making the pictures of the sharks in the subway tunnels and stuff like that. But there's ways of finding out and verifying those pictures, where they come from.
Well, you should have these lines of information ahead of time, right?
Yes.
So you'll give us eventually those things that we can already have it, and so that you know that you have a trusted source.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, Jeff, is SMS, is that a part of the disaster management communication infrastructure?
No, that is because of you know, the messaging. Can you imagine having to set up an SMS messaging for thousands and thousands of people?
Mm-hmm.
It would be kind of difficult to do, to get it, and time-consuming.
Right.
Because you've got to have either everybody's phone numbers in your phone or in your system to be already put in there to
right.
do that.
Right.
Now, if there's people in cities that have their own alerting system with SMS, that's a great thing.
Right.
So if systems have Everbridge or Code Red or the Nixle 360 or whatever, if they've signed into their local city's systems, or Alert LA for the cities that don't have it, to put their information in there, and that's a great way of getting information too.
Right. But you're saying it's just a matter of scale, that systems on the county level or the area level have been moving fast to using social media, because people can be responsible for setting up their own sort of endpoint, if you will.
Yes, and SMS messaging is very important for people to be contacting each other with. If you got friends or family,
mm-hmm.
Like I say, the data is always the last thing that fails. So, and you won't be able to call somebody, but use your texting to contact your family. Put that as part of your personal plan.
Right.
I'm going to text my wife to find out where she is and
right.
if she's okay. And
right.
then, you know, maybe even friends and family somewhere out of state.
Right. There has been some talk, you know, in my industry, computer industry in general, we follow cell technology quite heavily, and there's been some talk that the major carriers are looking at, down the road, several years, perhaps 5 years down the road, these cell towers will not be such isolated sort of silos. Sprint and Verizon and T-Mobile and AT&T, often their cell towers don't communicate with each other, but in the future they will, and so there will be a high survivability of the SMS system. That is, there will have to be significant physical destruction of large swaths of cell towers before the SMS system will go down for any significant period of time. So
yeah, and I understand how the systems, you know, go out like a spider too, and if they don't connect, you know, that's where it's a point of failure.
Right.
Because of the connection, so that would be a great thing. I mean, the survivability of text messaging, because that's more important than calling, because it takes up a lot more people can use it in a shorter period of time because there's a little data burst.
Right, right, right. Absolutely. Well, this is fascinating with what's possible. You know, I'm looking at TweetDeck right now, which is essentially free from Twitter. It's if you have Chrome, if you use the Chrome browser, It works really well. And of course, Firefox and Internet Explorer work as well, but it's very fast, and you can follow people, and you can follow messages, and it's somewhat understandable. But still, Jeff, you know, even being in the computer industry, I find tweeting and tweets and hashtags, and it's so overwhelming for myself, and I know for a lot of people.
You know, you got to use the KISS principle. you know, I mean, you know, don't try to make something out of it. Don't, you know, don't look at it as a you know, 5,000 pound gorilla. You know, look at it as just saying, this is an information sharing tool. I'm watching, I mean, you know, following the news. I get more information on Twitter than I do the news, because it's instantaneous.
Right.
I mean, you know, some of it you got to look at it and take it with a grain of salt, because you got to see the source where it's coming from. But some of it you look at and go, oh, that's interesting. Then you can go into your regular news and find out, yeah, okay, this is true. This is what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
But don't, you know, I mean, the hashtagging, people look at that, and the at sign of trying to figure who you're talking to and stuff, that takes time. You just learn how to do that. You start falling into that. But
mm-hmm.
the more you're on it, the more you're playing. It's like anything else. It's a tool, and you got to learn how to use the tool.
Right. Well, great. Now, what are the resources that people can go to find out more about the social media resources available in all the areas that they may live in, from the perspective of LA County Emergency Management?
Well, I tell you what, I mean, there's a lot of things. There's Nixle, you know, that's it's not a social media, it's an emergency alerting system, but mm-hmm. They do community alerts to let you know what's going on in their neighborhood, especially if there's crime taking place in your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
You can sign up for that, and you just go on there and create an account and put the area that you live, and then you pick out who you want to get information from. On Twitter, you do a search. You can just put in all your city's names in there, and you don't have to put the at sign, just put the names, and then it'll have a come, as soon as you do that, it'll come list of who's on there, and you
right.
just start clicking, or go to a lot of city websites are putting, like I'm getting ready to put on there, follow me on Twitter, follow me on Facebook, you know, blah, 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 because people do that now because it's a recognizable thing. They want to be known that they're on there
right.
sharing that information.
Well, if people want to go to Nixle, and Nixle is used by many, many public safety agencies, they can go to nixle.com, nixle.com, and Nixle is an SMS notification system, isn't that right?
It's one way, yes. But like I say, you put your information in if you want to receive the information from them. You know, you can opt out of things, but it's a great tool. I mean, it's, like I say, these are just tools in our toolbox. But Nixle is becoming a larger notification system for a lot of places now to get that information out in emergencies and in just localized events.
Right.
Did anybody get the Nixle alert a couple of weeks ago, that Amber alert?
Yes.
Yeah,
yep.
I never. That was the first time I had it. I was driving, and
that was
phone
not a Nixle alert. That was a WEA. That was the iPulse alert. That was one that comes out through the new the alerting system where your phone made the funny sound.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's not Nixle.
That's an iPulse. That's part of the new integrated public alert warning system.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess I'm signed up for that.
You're automatically into that, whether you want it to be or not.
Right.
Oh, okay. All right. So I think I'm on Nixle for my city that I live in. But I can connect to other ones then.
Right.
Okay. All right. Good to know.
All right. We are excited about the future of these technologies as we get earthquake alarms and other devices in our homes. We'll be better prepared. We'll have a little more time, but of course. That little more time will only help if we have already taken some previous time and gotten the things that we need to get. We repeat it every time we talk about this, that the first responders probably won't be able to get to you and help you and the people on your block for some time after a major earthquake. We're talking 72 hours minimum, perhaps as long as a week or two before you know, life will return to normal in your local neighborhood. So you need to have plenty of water, you need to have medicine and other things that you need on a daily basis, hopefully for at least 3, 4, 5 days. And then, you know, God forbid you should have to leave your home. You may need to be ready to go mobile if you can't shelter in place. Shelter in place is obviously the most desirable, but for some people that won't be possible. So Jeff, where are we now in preparation? Would you say what percentage of people in Area G are well prepared?
I would say no more than 10%.
Okay.
I never give a higher number because I'm not sure, but when you talk to people and you start asking them questions, they got a few things, they don't have a lot of things. So if you've got a few, that's being a little bit prepared, but you're not the whole way prepared. So,
right.
You know, like people, my neighbor asked me, he says, why you got 5 cases of water in your garage? I said, probably to give you a case to live on for a few days. And then he looks at me, he says, you really think it's that important? I says, absolutely.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, people I've seen, I mean, this little earthquake, I hate to say this, we really need something to shake up, you know. This one was not wide enough felt to really shake up things, but that's really what we need. I really hate saying that, but it's true. Because
yeah.
People are last-minute preparing, you know, and they don't want to take responsibility. Oh, it's not going to happen to me. Complacency really sets in because if it doesn't happen every day, you know, if you do something as dull and routine, you're not going to, you know, get it. So I think it's going to – some people that this was an eye-opener. Other people go, oh, it was just a little earthquake. no big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
yeah.
They haven't felt the big one.
Wow. 5.1 just this past Friday. 6.1, 100 times more powerful. 7.1, 10 times more powerful. 7.1, 100 times more powerful. 8.1, 1,000 times more powerful than what we felt on Friday. It's crazy. George, I want to give you a chance to talk about what's coming up and whatever announcements you want to make. Do you have some announcements you want to make? George?
George,
I'm right here. I just pushed the wrong button. I was finishing up in here trying to get things lined up, you know.
Okay,
I was texting. Now let's go back to Friday night. All right, Saturday we had an exercise. We Manhattan Beach Fire put on a training exercise for us and other Beach City CERT people that wanted to come join us at Chevron. Right. And I'm listening to those that came to the class. Couldn't get through on the phone, but texting was working. And Jeff, you said this was not widely felt. You know, we rolled in Manhattan Beach for 20 seconds or so, maybe. Felt like that. Maybe it was only 10 or 15. But it is the tech side of it uses less bandwidth. It's a separate bandwidth, as we in radio kind of know. So it's that's the way to go.